8 o'clock, having arrived, I'm going to call the Committee on Taxes to order. We do not have a quorum yet. So what we'd like to do and what we plan to do today is we have three testifiers that were not able to do so yesterday, and we'll have them do that today. And then we will have a presentation by the Department of Revenue. Commissioner Bowerly is here and staff. And we will get to that after the testifier. So we have Mr. Miller and Mr. Liskus and Mr. Havman in that order. And so, Mr. Miller, welcome to the committee, and please state your name.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Bruce Miller. I'm with Minnesota Farmers Union. As most of you know, the Farmers Union guy you were used to seeing here, Tom Peterson, is no longer with Farmers Union. As he's ascended to the position of Commissioner of the Department of Agriculture. So I'll be the Farmers Union guy you get to see more often. Well, maybe you'll bring the Commissioner in. I don't know. There's probably some issues. But thank you for this opportunity to, first of all, introduce myself so I'll have a chance to work with you as the days go on these tax issues. Some of you I've met and know. Others I'm looking forward to getting to know. As you know, family farmers are facing several years past and several years future of a depressed farm economy with low prices on high inputs. That brings taxes to the forefront in a lot of our discussions, and I just want to highlight a couple that we're going to be working on, and I'm sure there'll be many more. But the two key things that we are working on is conforming state tax code to the federal tax code, especially Section 179 for accelerated depreciation. And secondly, extending the property tax relief for agricultural landowners on school capital improvement levies and taking a broader look at property tax relief as it comes up with opportunities. The other issues that are not side issues because they're important, but issues around taxes that we'll be dealing with you on this journey is compensation for landowners affected by the buffer law. And we're willing to look at tax credits or any other sources of this compensation. We'll also be looking again. We're visiting with you where to go with the beginning farmer tax credit, particularly as it relates to familial opportunities for putting younger people, new people on the farms. Finally, the last two, I'm sure we'll be here and visiting with you as time goes on, relate to the provider tax on health care and the gas tax. So those are all fun issues that I look forward to visiting with you on. I'm sure we'll have some just meaningful, fruitful, and delightful conversations. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity to be here on behalf of Minnesota Farmers Union.
Mr. Miller, thank you so much. Mr. Liskus is next. Oh, I'm sorry. Mr. Miller, would you come back? We've got a question. Representative O'Neill.
Mr. Chairman, I thought I had escaped.
No, you had not.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt. Just a quick clarifying question. When you say gas tax, are you in favor of increasing the gas tax or are you not in favor of increasing the gas tax?
Mr. Chairman, Miller.
Yes, Representative. Our Farmers Union policy supports an increase in the gas tax. It's going to be circumstantial, as we all know. We'll see. We always measure everything on the actual bill language that's presented, as opposed in the final result, as opposed to the concept. But conceptually, we support it.
Any other questions? All right.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yep.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. We do have a quorum at this time, so Mr. Liskus, as you would come down, we do have a quorum. Does anyone like to approve the January 23rd minutes?
So moved.
Representative Brand moves to approve the Wednesday, January 23rd minutes. Any discussion on that? If not, I'm going to call for the vote. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The minutes of January 23rd, 2019 are approved. Also for members, and you have this in your packet, I want to refer, as of Thursday, January 24th, the following bills are hereby referred to the Property and Local Tax Division. There are six bills on that list, and they'll also be posted on the website. Mr. Liskus.
All right. Well, good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Felipe Yescas with the Service Employees International Union, Minnesota State Council. I will be the lead person working with this committee, so thank you for the opportunity to introduce myself. Essentially, my priority this year will be to ensure that we have adequate funding for the priorities that the union is working on in relation to education and healthcare. And so I really look forward to working with all of you. I'm open to any questions, but I really just wanted to introduce myself and keep it brief.
Very good. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you.
Mr. Hatman. And please state your name and good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Morning, members. My name is Mark Haveman. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Center for Fiscal Excellence. We are a member-supported research and education organization in support of sound tax policy and fiscally responsible government. You've heard a lot of testimony on specific provisions pertaining to federal conformity. What I'd like to do today is take a step back and offer four more general recommendations on how to improve on last year's approach to conformity. Our first recommendation is don't subordinate simplicity of tax administration to other objectives in deciding how to conform. There's a very good reason why in most years federal conformity bills are passed on a bipartisan basis early and signed expeditiously. That's because everyone should and can get behind making tax filing and compliance simpler for taxpayers, easier for the state to administer, and less costly for both. Now, the TCJA is certainly a very different and infinitely more complicated situation than the usual tax conformity decision-making situations before you folks. But that shouldn't negate the idea that making the tax system easier to deal with and less costly for both taxpayers and the state deserves priority attention in any federal conformity decisions. Last year, simplicity, compliance, administrative considerations were immediately overwhelmed by other issues like winners and losers in state budget ambitions. That should be reversed. First, explore how simplicity and efficiency in state tax compliance and administration can be supported and advanced given the new federal realities. With that priority and objective in mind, then debate distribution, tax levels, tax rates, and budget considerations to determine how state conformity should fit into the broader tax bill. Our second recommendation is resist the temptation to build a conformity plan based on preserving the status quo for every individual taxpayer. Last year, a major theme was to make sure nobody paid more state taxes as a result of state conformity actions. That led to the proposed preservation of nearly the full slate of former federal deductions and exemptions in our state tax code. And in some respects, an argument can be made it was more of a federal nonconformity proposal than a conformity proposal. While the desire to do this is understandable, reflexively preserving every old federal deduction in state law for a fraction of the number of Minnesota itemizers for a small fraction of their former value does not serve the cause of simplicity in tax administration. Moreover, this type of hold harmless effort in many cases won't work. That's because income changes under the TCJA provisions potentially impact phase-out provisions of various deductions, taxability of Social Security benefits, etc. The point is, other moving pieces of the puzzle affect these good intentions. And it's another example why it's important to start with a fundamental objective of federal conformity, ease of compliance, administration, understandability, and transparency, then work from there. Our third recommendation is don't use one-time or legally questionable revenues from conformity to support permanent spending or permanent tax cuts. Under a conformity plan, there will be revenue effects from a lot of temporary federal provisions. There was a lot of interest last year in using these one-time revenues to support both permanent spending increases and permanent tax cuts. In addition, as has been noted, there are a number of unsettled constitutional and legal issues surrounding state claims on TCJA foreign earnings provisions. If there is one area of agreement on the TCJA among national think tanks across the political spectrum, it's to advise against building such revenue from conformity into base budgets. Our final recommendation is give careful and special attention to Minnesota, to getting Minnesota back to being consistent with federal tax rules that have multi-year effects. As House research highlighted a couple of days ago, our failure to conform last year introduced significant complexity regarding tax provisions spanning multiple years of tax returns, cost recovery rules, carrybacks, carryforwards of losses, carryovers of credits, etc. These create very ripe conditions for unintentional noncompliance, as well as potential tax equity problems of treating similar taxpayers fairly. Getting back in sync with the federal tax system on these issues is important to reduce complexity. But doing that well through retroactive amended returns or catch-up provisions is by itself an extremely complex task in its own right. It's not the most exciting thing or the most attention-grabbing thing you must do, but is absolutely one of the most important things you must do this year. We encourage you to listen to the advice of tax practitioners as well as the Department of Revenue in charting a path that makes sense for both taxpayers and tax administrators. Mr. Chairman, thank you for the opportunity and your consideration.
Thank you very much, Mr. Haveman. And I was with you until you said this wasn't the most exciting. So thank you so much. Thank you. Before we move on, I want to introduce a temporary page. And so we have Allie Michael in the back there. And the name might be somewhat familiar, Mr. Chair. So, Allie, would you just talk a little bit about where you're from? And
which... I'm from St. Paul. I grew up here, and I went to the University of Minnesota.
Very good. And the name is, her father was at this committee every once in a while over the last many, many years. So,
Mr. Michael.
Yeah, Mr. Michael.
Was that a question or a statement?
So thank you so much for being willing to do that. And so the Michaels are not too far away here. All right. So with that, we're going to move to the Department of Revenue. And we have Commissioner Bowerly. Thank you so much for being here. Congratulations on your reappointment as Commissioner of Revenue. And also with her is Ms. Starr and Ms. Rowley. And so I know we asked you to talk primarily about tax filing for this year, but also anything general that you might have, anything on the Wayfair decision, those type of things. Feel free to do that. Members, what I would ask is that we'll wait and do questions at the very end after all the presentations. And so if you got a question, write it down and remember it, and we'll do that at the end. So, Commissioner, again, thank you for being here, and please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. Good morning. My name is Cynthia Bowerly, and I am the Commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Revenue. And with me this morning are Assistant Commissioner Rowley and Assistant Commissioner Starr. And what we're hoping to do this morning is to give you an update on the filing season, which starts on Monday, January 28th. I know you'll all be spending your weekend getting your tax forms ready and getting ready to file. And if not, you have until April 15th. So that deadline is still out there. We wanted to share with you what we've been doing since the last legislative session. And because you have some new members to this committee, we thought we'd give you a little bit of a department overview and update of where we've been, including some important issues like the Wayfair decision that affected Minnesota. In your packets, members, you have both the PowerPoint presentation and then a number of handouts that we'll be referring to. The first is sort of an overview of what the department does and who our customers are and what we do on behalf of the state of Minnesota. So those of you who have been on the committee are familiar with, first I have to figure out how to advance the slides. All right, they're going to figure out how to advance the slides. Maybe Nathan can help us. Our mission at the Minnesota Department of Revenue is working together to fund Minnesota's future. Thank you. We view together as the most important part of that word, and when we think of together, we think not only of the 1,400 excellent staff members at the Department of Revenue, but also all of the other important players in the tax ecosystem. So tax preparers, tax professionals, whether they be lawyers or CPAs, volunteer tax preparers, and also the local county assessors, which are a key part of our property tax system. Our vision is that everyone reports, pays, and receives the right amount, no more, no less. And that's a very precise vision that we have. And we want to make sure that everyone in Minnesota who is entitled to some of the benefits under our tax code that have been put into place by the legislature and those policy choices has ability to receive those. And we do all of this work with guided by our four values of integrity, respect, excellence, and accountability. We really do focus our work on our customers. So each year, the department focuses on the customers, 2.9 million individual income tax filers. Over the next few months, we'll be filing individual income tax returns with us. Over 800,000 Minnesotans file property tax refunds with us. They receive those refunds in August, September, and October each year. 1.7 of those 2.9 million receive a refund, an individual income tax refund. We work with VITA sites to make sure that volunteers who are certified by the IRS can help Minnesotans file their income tax and property tax refunds. We also, through our website, provide free access to software. We're going to tell you a little bit more about these opportunities as we head into filing season. We serve all types of businesses, from Fortune 100 companies to startups and garages. We have over 160,000 Minnesota businesses who are registered to collect and remit sales tax to the department on behalf of their customers. And we have over 400,000 businesses who are registered in our e-services portal, which is how those businesses file and pay. One of the things we focus on, as I will echo what Mr. Haveman spoke about this morning, one of the objectives of the department is to make sure that our customers have an easy ability to file and pay their taxes. And we do that with quality customer service at the front end, making sure that they have access to the information they need about what their tax obligations are. So we have a phone line that's available. People can email us. They can stop in at our St. Paul office. We serve those customers both virtually and in person. We have subscription email services, and if you're not subscribed to them, I would strongly suggest you go to our website, click on the red envelope, and you can subscribe to over 178 different subscription services, different tax topics, including updates to law changes that we send out to individuals across the state of Minnesota. We have over 400,000 individuals subscribed to those information systems right now. We serve people through social media. Not everyone likes us on Facebook yet, so I would encourage you to go to our Facebook page and like the department. It is a good place to gather information about what is happening at the department. It's often where we show some of the videos that we create to give taxpayers some training about how to access systems at the department. We work to make sure that customers have what they need, and last year we helped over 1.1 million customers in person, over the phone, and through email questions. So we want to make sure we're getting them that information on the front end. We also work closely with individual groups, so whether it's a veterans group or a Rotary Club, we are available to present information on taxes and make sure that they have the information that they need. We also work too with outreach for businesses. So we have classes that we deliver across the state and online. Over 100 classes were delivered across the state last year. So not just here in St. Paul, but across greater Minnesota to make sure that businesses have the information they need so they can file and pay their taxes online. Assistant Commissioner Starr is going to go into a little bit more detail, but we are constantly looking to improve the technology and the tools that we have for our customers. So we have a sales tax calculator, and we've just recently rolled out a sales tax map so that retailers can easily find the sales tax rate that are applicable to the sales that they are making. As you are all aware, there are more and more local option sales taxes across the state of Minnesota, and so we want to make sure retailers have access to that information. I'm now going to turn it over to Assistant Commissioner Rowley to start us off on our filing season update. Thank you.
Commissioner Rowley, welcome.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair, members. For the record, my name is Cynthia Rowley, Assistant Commissioner with the Department of Revenue. Thank you for having me here today. Since the end of the 2018 legislative session in May, we've been updating our tax filing systems to accommodate the differences between federal and Minnesota tax laws. There were significant revisions to the federal tax laws, but Minnesota law did not significantly change. Again, another one of the handouts that you have is represented on the screen. There's two sides to this. We'll start with the front side. This handout kind of depicts the process that we go through every year to prepare for tax filing season. So far, since the end of last session, we've gathered frequently asked questions and provided answers on a FAQ page on our website. We've hosted webinars, listening sessions, and participated in conferences and other outreach events over the summer to engage a community in our filing system development work and to go through some of our 2018 filing system changes. So far, we've engaged about 2,000 people in that outreach work. We've also published final forms and instructions in early October so that our software developers, folks like Intuit, TurboTax, can work on their certification and testing of software preparation. Inside the department, we've also worked to develop and test our own tax processing systems, and we've continued to work with software providers to certify and test their systems, and we continue to engage our customers, including tax professionals. The other side of the sheet, so this side, just highlights and provides more detail to what it takes to develop the tax processing system, test it, and make it ready for use each year. So as soon as our near final forms were published in August, the department started to identify the system requirements necessary to begin development. This is how we make the tax forms and software products talk to our tax processing system. We gathered the work to gather system requirements includes things like gathering information from over 20 different software providers regarding over 50 software products. We mapped how the tax returns would feed into the department's tax systems. We created paths between a tax return and a taxpayer record, make sure that they connect. Information goes to the right individual. And we set parameters for fraud detection, an important effort in these times. We've also created ways to identify errors before refunds are issued so that taxpayers get the right amount. Developers and programmers at the department and at software provider companies began building the systems based on these requirements. They test and they retest the systems internally to ensure everything works before moving on to the next phase. Then we move on to internal tests and software provider tests. So both the department and software providers test, adjust, and retest until all the software products work with the department's system. During this stage, we are not only testing that the electronic filing systems work, but also that the paper filing systems work. We test our data capture software and make sure that if someone is filing on paper, we're capturing the information accurately and correctly, and that our systems know how to read the lines on the form. Finally, as we get close to the filing season open, the department starts to accept small test batches of returns to production tests. And this is a phase we're in right now. These tests ensure that Minnesota's system and the software provider's products are compatible with the IRS system. And all this work is vital to ensure that Minnesotans can file and pay and receive their refunds in a timely manner. This work leads up to full implementation when the tax filing system is officially opening. And as Commissioner Bowerly mentioned, this year we'll open with the IRS on January 28th. As we continue to do our work with software providers, we are really guided by a number of priorities around serving taxpayers and identifying solutions that support our taxpayers as much as possible. We work to minimize the impact on the administrative impact on all of our customers, including taxpayers, tax professionals, and software providers. We're supporting voluntary compliance reforms and instructions that illustrate the changes required to calculate 2018 Minnesota taxable income as clearly and transparently as possible. And we're focused on protecting the integrity of the tax system and administering it in accordance with the laws currently in place. I wanted to highlight a few of the key changes for this upcoming tax year. So first of all, line one of the form M1, the individual income tax form, now starts with federal adjusted gross income, or FAGI, instead of federal taxable income, or FTI. Many of the federal tax changes contained within the federal tax law impact deductions taxpayers make before calculating federal taxable income and after calculating federal adjusted gross income. We changed the starting point of the form to calculate the correct Minnesota taxable income as simply and as accurately as possible. For tax year 2018, taxpayers may claim either the standard deduction or elect to itemize deductions on their 2018 Minnesota income tax return. And this is true regardless of the election they made on their 2018 federal return. Clients whose filing status is married filing separate must itemize their deductions on their Minnesota return if their spouse itemized their deductions. This information was published in Revenue Notice 18-01 on September 4th of 2018, and that revenue notice does provide more information. Personal exemptions are still used when filing Minnesota individual income tax returns, even though they have disappeared from the federal return. The exemption is $4,150, as established in the IRS Revenue Procedure 2017-58. And this exemption amount does phase out for individuals whose incomes exceed a certain threshold. Here's some information about those standard deductions. As you can see, these are the amounts for 2018. Of course, additional amounts apply for taxpayers that are blind or 65 years of age or older, and dependents who can be claimed on another return have their standard deduction limited to the larger of $1,050 or earned income plus $350, up to the standard deduction for their filing status, age, and vision. And again, these amounts are based on IRS Revenue Procedure 2017-58. We have five new schedules this year to accommodate federal changes because Minnesota law has not changed. So the forms you see on this slide are forms we've added to capture things that still exist for Minnesota tax filing purposes. And it allows our taxpayers to take deductions for the additional itemized deductions, casualty and theft loss, moving expenses, etc. In addition to these new schedules, there's the Schedule M1NC, which is federal adjustments, has changed from last year to account for the differences between federal and state law. This schedule is now two columns. There's an addition column and a subtractions column. And some of the federal changes to income can only result in additional income for Minnesota purposes. So for these provisions, we've grayed out the subtraction column, like on line three in this example, or in this slide. Some of the federal changes can only result in less income for Minnesota purposes, and so we've grayed out the additions column, like on line one. Some of the federal provisions can result in either additional or less Minnesota income, depending on the taxpayer's situation. So we've not grayed out either column for these provisions like you see on line 10. Taxpayers enter their adjustments as a positive amount in the appropriate column and report those differences. So we'll look now at how the new schedules flow into the M1 or the individual income tax return. And this you also have as a handout, this one? This is a full picture. So this visual is about individual income tax forms and schedules. And the visual is published on our website, and so are the forms and schedules. This visual illustrates how the individual income tax forms interact to complete returns for this filing season. So that on this handout, that the middle column represents key lines on the M1, or the individual income tax return. And the left and right-hand columns represent forms and schedules that feed into each of those lines on the M1. We encourage you to sign up for our email list. You can do that by going to our website, selecting the red envelope in the lower right-hand corner, and choosing individual income tax updates for tax professionals, among other lists, to stay up to date. You can also stay up to date on the most recent tax law information by selecting the orange tax law change button, as you see here. That's where we'll post updates and information as it becomes available. So now I'll turn it over to my colleague, Jenny Starr.
Commissioner Rowley, thank you so much. Commissioner Starr, welcome.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Jenny Starr, it's a pleasure to be with you today. I'm just going to give a few additional updates on the business income tax side for this upcoming filing season. As my colleague explained, we've really focused this year on listening to our customers, and in particular our tax professional and tax preparer customers, who have been letting us know what the most frequently asked questions are as they've been preparing for this filing season. We answered over 50 frequently asked questions on our website and posted those answers as quickly as we could before filing season. Here on the slide is an example of one of the first questions regarding businesses that we received. The question is, will Minnesota allow my business to use the same small business method of accounting for Minnesota that is now required under the TCJA for my business federally? And one thing we learned is that in reviewing Minnesota statutes, particularly 290.07 subdivision 2, we identified that Minnesota current law, without the need of a federal update in this particular area, permits the use of the accounting method that is regularly used by the taxpayer, as long as that method clearly and fairly reflects the taxpayer's income. When we used our website and our outreach programs to try and get this kind of information to our tax preparer, tax professional customers as quickly as possible. If you go to our website, you'll find the rest of the frequently asked questions, many of those with regard to businesses in particular. We also, like our colleagues in the individual income tax side of filing season, needed to prepare this year a number of nonconformity schedules to help taxpayers identify the differences between current federal law and current Minnesota law to allow them to prepare their Minnesota returns accurately. So as you'll see on the screen, we have seven new nonconformity schedules for each of the business income tax returns to report those nonconformity adjustments. Each of these seven new nonconformity schedules have a very similar look and feel. These forms were modeled after the nonconformity schedule that has existed for a number of years on the individual income tax return. In addition to these additional nonconformity schedules, there are four new worksheets included in our instructions to assist in calculating, again, those nonconformity adjustments. We've been very focused on providing as many tools as possible for our customers to help folks through this filing season. That includes the creation of those new forms, those schedules, and those worksheets. And then also handouts like this one you'll find in your packet where we have tried to identify which nonconformity items can be found on which schedules and worksheets so that tax preparers can find a place where they can easily digest If these particular items are in play with your particular business activity, here's a helpful way to understand where those adjustments are going to appear on the return. Okay, so we've talked a lot about the filing season. I thought we'd also share a little bit about what's going on in sales tax. And I know we've all heard a lot about Wayfair, and I'll get to that in a minute. But before we go there, I wanted to talk a little bit about some of the work we've been doing in our sales and criminal investigations division at Revenue. So some of you may be familiar with the term Zapper, or sales suppression device, or software. This is software that allows a business to delete part of its cash transactions after the fact, creating a second set of books in their point-of-sale system, allowing businesses to report smaller sales and to illegally keep some of the sales tax that their customers paid in trust to them to be remitted to the state. The use of Zappers violates trust between customers and a business. It deprives the state, local governments, and the public of tax revenue, and it creates an unfair advantage over businesses that are accurately collecting and remitting all of the sales tax to the government. Early in May, we, along with the St. Louis County Attorney's Office, announced the first convictions, criminal convictions, of two individuals in a related business for tax crimes connected with the use of sales suppression software. During the plea hearing, the defendants admitted to intentionally using the Zapper software, which they referred to as Happy World. The department was, that software was contained in a thumb drive, which I hope you can see on the screen here, which the department's criminal investigators discovered during a search warrant of the restaurant in question. Working with computer forensics specialists, the department was able to open this Happy World software and learn more about how it can be used. So you'll see on half of the slide here a screen image of what that program looks like. And I know the writing is very small. In the picture, you'll see a number of buttons at the bottom of the computer screen. They're named things like remove selected orders, rearrange order numbers, change by percentage, double-click to change the order. And what we learned working with our computer forensic specialists is that this relatively simple computer program can make some really sophisticated changes to a business's point-of-sale system. So one simple example is you can select cash transactions over a specific period of time and delete those transactions altogether and then reorder the order numbers to make it look like nothing is missing. Or you can go in and select transactions with a particular kind of purchase. So maybe everyone who ordered a double cheeseburger over a particular point of time, and the system can erase the double cheeseburger and replace it with a side order of fries. So in this way, the sales receipt still exists in the point of sale system. It may not look at first glance as a receipt that has been zapped in some way. We are continuing to identify this kind of sales suppression either through devices or software like the one I've described here, or through direct gross underreporting, simply making manual changes to a business's books and records. You can expect to see more cases and more headlines like this one from our work at Revenue. And we want to thank the legislature in particular for the laws you passed in 2017 establishing a felony criminal penalty for this kind of use of sales suppression devices. That 2017 law change will continue to support the department and our law enforcement partners as we continue to do this work. I've given that presentation before, and it's a little more lighthearted. In this room, it felt a little sad. All right. Moving on to the impacts of Wayfair. As you know, on June 21st, the United States Supreme Court ruled in South Dakota versus Wayfair. that physical presence is not required for sellers to create substantial nexus and be responsible for sales tax collection for the state of Minnesota and other states. This decision by the Supreme Court caused two existing laws in Minnesota to go into effect. The first was originally enacted in 1989, and it's Minnesota's Economic Nexus Law. This is what requires remote sellers that exceed our small seller threshold and sell goods or services into the state of Minnesota from another state to register and collect Minnesota sales tax. The second existing Minnesota law is our Marketplace Law, which was originally enacted in 2017, and Wayfair also caused this law to go into effect. We won't go into the details now.
Commissioner Starr, if you just hold up a second. Yeah. So I know who the chair of the tax committee was in 2017, Chair Davids, but Representative Carlson in 1989, do you remember who would have been the chair of the tax committee that year? I'm just wondering who had the forethought to think about that, because it took, almost 30 years later for that to take place. And I know we talked about this last year in tax, the last couple years in tax committee with the marketplace and so forth, but 19
years ago, Mr. Chairman.
I thought you were the only one I could really ask to have that information, Representative Carlson. So we'll have, that is the quiz for the day. Representative Lauren Solberg, could you go ahead and holler that out if you...
I think it was Tomlinson.
I don't... Representative Tomlinson?
I think he would have been back in the 70s. I don't think he would have been...
Oh. Call her dad.
yeah, we could have Miss Michael call her dad. He would know, I'm sure. So, well, all right. Well, we'll maybe, if someone gets that information, bring it to the front desk here, and we'll report that. Was Representative Sable ever the tax chair, or Representative Carlson?
Mr. Chairman, no, but when he was speaker, he would always be on the tax conference committee. He had a high interest in taxes.
And I know there was a Representative Kelly.
Kelly was, then, Mr. Chairman, the chair of taxes, I think my second or third term.
And so that, all right.
There was a tax chairman when I was first elected, and I was on the tax committee in 73 when I was first elected. And he was appointed, I think, at midterm to a judgeship. And at any rate, I think we can. Okay. I got my iPad open.
I think Representative Fabian looked like he had some information, possibly.
Maybe he's ahead of us on the research. Yeah.
Representative Fabian.
Mr. Chair, I just looked up online here. It's amazing what Google knows that I don't know. It looks like maybe it was D. Long.
That's what I see.
Ooh, Representative Long?
Yeah.
Could have been. She was chair.
Yeah. Very good.
Who was in the Senate? Was it Dougie Johnson?
Representative Ogren after Representative. So, all right. I think it probably was Representative D. Long. So, very good.
So, she was
figured that out. This tax committee can do anything. Figure that. All right. So, thank you, members, for weighing in on that. So, are we back to... Commissioner Starr. Sorry for the... interruption.
Mr. Chair, members, I would just note that while Wayfair impacted remote sellers and marketplace providers, it of course also impacts sellers here in the state of Minnesota. Sellers here in the state who are selling through a marketplace would be impacted by this law change. Of course, our sellers here in Minnesota who are selling into other states, and then sellers who now need to also make sure that they're collecting the right amount of local tax to their sales and destinations across the state of Minnesota. Like our work in the income tax filing season, since the Supreme Court decision was announced in June, we've been working really hard to provide education, guidance, and resources to remote sellers, marketplace providers, and Minnesota sellers, hoping to provide the necessary information and tools that people need to comply with our sales tax laws. We started communicating with taxpayers the day the decision was announced. We hosted an emergency meeting of the Streamlined Sales Tax Governing Board at our offices in St. Paul within weeks of the decision. That meeting gave us an opportunity to hear from affected businesses from across the country and to do that work of gathering people's most frequently asked questions, which we dedicated our resources to getting answered on our website as quickly as possible. We've posted more than 30 answers to frequently asked questions for this community of our customers since the decision was announced. And then we've been working on tools. So many of you might be familiar with our sales tax rate calculator. It's been available on our website for a number of years. I think it's the third most popular hit on our website. Folks use this. They enter in an address and an amount of the sale, and it will calculate the correct amount of sales tax for the source or location of that sale. But we've been working to improve this resource because we know it's so heavily utilized by people. Over the last couple of legislative sessions, I've worked with members of the legislature and some of your constituents who have very much wanted us to create a downloadable Excel spreadsheet that would do the same thing that the calculator does, but would do it on people's desktop computers without the need to go out to our website. This was actually a hard tool to create, but I want you to know that we finally got there. There is now a downloadable Excel spreadsheet. Folks who rely on this need to remember to download it every quarter because local rates can be updated on a quarterly basis. But once you've downloaded it, you can enter in a 9-digit zip code, and it will produce the local and state rates for that location for you. And then we figured out how to do this. So this is our new sales tax rate map, and we are really excited about it. This works like other maps that you would find online. You can click and drag and zoom. You can enter in an address. If you start to enter an address, it will help you auto-populate the potential addresses in Minnesota. So I can enter my home address. It will auto-populate that for me. I can choose from a list of potential addresses that are the one I'm looking for. And it will show you visually the address you've looked up and show you the rate that applies. If you put in a sales transaction amount, it'll calculate the tax for you. And then you can hit a button that will download that information, and you can print it for your records if, for whatever reason, you need to keep that information going forward. We've heard really good things about this. And again, this is a space of thanks to legislators and legislative staff. We put this map out last legislative session for beta testing. We gathered a lot of feedback through surveys on how people wanted to use it and what made it work best for people, and we were able to incorporate a lot of that feedback into the final product. The last tool that I would note for you is what we call certified service providers. So through our partnership with Streamline Sales Tax, Minnesota being a full member of Streamline Sales Tax, we also work with certified service providers, or CSPs. Now, these are companies that have been certified by Streamline Sales Tax to perform all of a seller's sales and use tax functions. The CSP software works with a seller's accounting system to identify which products and services that they're selling are taxable. It applies the appropriate tax rate and records the transaction. The CSP software also prepares and files returns and remits tax to each Streamline member state. And what's more, Streamline member states, including Minnesota, certify the accuracy of CSP software, and we provide liability relief for incorrect tax calculation based on that certification. CSPs also resolve any notices or audits by member states. So in addition to that Minnesota calculator, the downloadable spreadsheet, and the map, CSPs are also a great tool for businesses who are collecting Minnesota's state and local sales taxes. We often get asked, what are we hearing about Minnesota's existing laws, the law from 89 and the law from 2017, and the implementation of that as a result of Wayfair. One thing that we heard is that Minnesota was one of 11 states after the Wayfair decision that was identified as green to go by the Tax Foundation for implementation of Wayfair. And that's because our laws already provided, since 1989, that safe harbor by excluding small remote sellers from the obligation to collect and remit. We were green to go also because we announced as early as July 25th that remote sellers and marketplace providers would need to begin complying with our laws no later than October 1st. This met the expectation by the Supreme Court that states not engage in retroactive collection. And then, as a full member of Streamline, our laws already provide a number of the simplification items that the U.S. Supreme Court was looking for, including things like a single level of administration of both state and local taxes, as well as access to that software through certified service providers. So what we know since October 1st is that our customers are using our website. They're also making use of a number of webinars that we've been providing for remote sellers, Minnesota sellers, and marketplaces. And we know this. We know that, you know, recently I went out and bought a really big TV and a sound bar and a subwoofer. It was great fun. And, you know, I paid the same amount of tax in my local retailer that I would have paid online if I had chosen to purchase it there. And that's a good thing for fairness in our system. And with that, I'll turn it back over to Commissioner Bowerly for some additional department updates.
Commissioner Starr, before you go on, I have one comment and one question. And the comment is, Representative Petersburg showed some information that Representative Paul Ogren took over as tax chair November 1st of 1989. So if there was a special session that year, Representative Carlson, do you remember there's a special session that year, that maybe we cannot give Representative Long all the credit if, in fact, there was a special session after November 1st that they would have passed that law. So we need further research. We haven't quite got to the bottom of this. The one question I have, Mr. Starr, is the small seller threshold. I know the South Dakota State had a certain amount of value in the sales, which is different than Minnesota, which is something that we might certainly have to address. So could you elaborate on that a little bit, on what the differences are between what was in the Supreme Court case of South Dakota versus what Minnesota's law is? And if not, we can get that.
Mr. Chair, members.
And House Research may know that too.
Right. So I worry that I'm going to forget and get this wrong. Minnesota has two tiers of a threshold. So it's either over 100 sales and $100,000. I'm going to get it wrong.
We can
Does House Research know? I'm so sorry. I answer this question a lot.
Mr.
Commissioner Bowerly knows.
We're going to Mr. Clayman. Absolutely.
All right, Mr. Clayman.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Assistant Commissioner Starr, I believe, was on the right track. I believe it is 100 sales is $100,000 is the threshold under our small seller exception. Then there's another de minimis exception for marketplace providers, which is, I believe, $10,000. And
okay,
certain number of sales.
Mr. Chair, I've looked it up on our frequently asked questions.
Very good, Commissioner
okay.
Starr.
So it's 100 or more retail sales shipped to Minnesota, or 10 or more retail sales shipped to Minnesota that total more than $100,000. And South Dakota's law has a simpler approach to that threshold, and so I think you're correct. There will be conversation around Minnesota's 1989 visionary law and what it should be today.
Very good. So, committee members, so this is something we may have to look to adjust to make sure we're kind of in line with what the Supreme Court case said, just to be certain on that. So, Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question about the new governor and his policies moving forward. Different governors have had different sort of stands on what triggers an audit, whether it be income tax audit or more commonly done the sales tax audit. And some commissioners have created a system of just red flagging something that looks out of step. Some have said, we're going to just audit every single small business every 3 years. So, you know, you have a 3.5 year look back that you can collect sales tax for. So that was basically every single small business would be captured in that. So what is Governor Walz's stand on sales tax audits in particular? Because I know probably every single member has constituents that have complained to them of these sales tax audits that have come in and taken a lot of their time and a lot of their money. It takes accounting work and lawyer work, and their initial bill, anecdotally, I'm always hearing is $30,000 to $40,000 in sales tax and fines and fees, and then it usually gets whittled down to about $3,000 to $5,000, to which the accountants say, just pay it because you're going to pay us more to whittle it down anymore. So just curious what the governor has on his docket now for how he will be treating small businesses with it. Will it be more of a red flag sort of system, looking for you know, things that look out of place, or are we just going to audit every single small business again every 3 years?
Commissioner Bowerly.
Mr. Chairman and Representative, first I think I would I can't speak for governors prior to Governor Dayton, but it has, in my experience with the department, is department policies around auditing, often directed by necessity or choices that the legislature makes. So I don't anticipate that Governor Walz will have a particular stance on auditing, and like I said, Governor Dayton did. I can't speak for the department under Governor Pawlenty. What I will tell you is that the audit system that we use now is focused on education first and working with those furthest from compliance. One of the things that the department knows is that in the 2000s era, we operated under compliance initiatives. The legislature would ask the department to hire a certain number of auditors and collectors and really focus the work on those two activities, and in order to raise revenue for the state budget. And so the department would be given a certain dollar amount and needed to hire auditors and collectors only. And so we were in businesses every 3 years because that's what we were being asked to do on behalf of the state budget. And I will tell you that since those compliance initiative years ended, the department has really focused on holistically serving our customers. So again, starting with that education and outreach. So after, when we ended those compliance years, we were doing, I think, you know, a handful, maybe two dozen classes for sales tax across the state of Minnesota so that businesses could learn what their obligations were. Now we do over 100. We think it's really important to help businesses get it right. We know most Minnesotans want to pay their taxes and file their taxes in the right way. And what we do now, and I'll maybe ask Assistant Commissioner Starr to talk a little bit more about the high-level aspects of how we approach auditing at the department.
Commissioner Starr.
Mr. Chair, Representative, what I would add to Commissioner Bowerly is the other thing that has changed at the department over the past few years is that we've worked really hard to make sure that we're surveying our audit customers at the end of audits to identify ways in which our audit programs worked well and ways in which our audit programs did not hit the mark and where we could improve. One thing that we've learned in particular from our sales and use tax customers is well over 90%, I think sometimes 95 to even 97% in some quarters report in those surveys that they feel that they were treated fairly during the audit process. And those kinds of survey responses help us know that our programs have changed over time and are treating our customers in a fair, respectful manner during the course of an audit. Other ways in which we've worked to improve on the corporate franchise tax side is we've heard from our customers that our audits take too long. Some of you may have remember that from the research and development work or report that came out a session ago. We're happy to report that well over 80%, almost 90% of corporate audits today are completed within a year's time, which is actually a really good time frame for the complexity of a corporate franchise tax return. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
So I think we're going to hold up on questions right now because I'd like Commissioner Bowerly to finish up. This is an important topic, but I just want to finish up and make sure we have time. And then any and all questions when we're done. So Commissioner Bowerly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. We just have a few more pieces of information we'd like to share with you, and then we'd be happy to take any questions that you have. So first, I want to share with you that we, based on our customer feedback, we are looking to redesign our website. We are rolling out a beta version of a new website. It is available right now, so I do hope that you will take a chance to go to our website and take a look at this beta. This is your opportunity to tell us if it takes too many clicks to get to the precise information that you are looking for. So this is your opportunity. And then we will take all of that feedback that we learn and push it into the new website that we'll be rolling out this summer. So for this beta period, our current website is what people will use to file and pay their taxes and get the information that they need, but this new version is available for testing and for you to take a look at. So we will be looking for your help once again in this beta to make sure that we are serving you as our key customers and all of our customers as we roll this new product out. One of the other things you'll be hearing more from us in the near future, but wanted to hit on today, you in your packets you have some information about free income tax filing. So this is provided by all of the software vendors who are providing tax software in Minnesota. Those who are part of what's called the Free File Alliance, which is a national organization of software vendors who provide free access to taxpayers. So last year, nearly 90% of Minnesotans used electronic software to file their taxes, and many more are eligible to electronically file their state and federal taxes for free using this software. More than 800,000 Minnesotans were eligible for free filing but did not take advantage of it. So we're looking for your help to make sure that people know about this opportunity. We also want to make sure people know about VITA sites, which are where certified volunteers prepare taxes for individuals across the state of Minnesota. We have options. These are available, like I said, on our website. So if you access the software through our website and you meet the eligibility criteria, which are laid out there, you can access that free software. And on our website as well are the locations of the VITA sites and AARP sites, which provide that free tax preparation for individuals across Minnesota. If you go to our website and put free file into the search box, you will see both of those opportunities. And we really encourage, again, free file or electronic filing really is the best way to file your taxes. It walks through step by step the information that you will need to complete both your federal and your state taxes. And of course, we always encourage direct deposit because it is the most, it is the quickest and most effective way to get your refund. As we mentioned at the beginning, 2.9 million Minnesotans are about to file their tax returns, and 1.7 million approximately. There's obviously some, it's not a big round number, but we'll be receiving income tax refunds. And we know that is an important question. People want to say, always ask, how long will it take to get my refund? And the answer to that question is, of course, it depends. Every return is different and every tax year is different. And we want to just give you a little bit of information. We know your constituents often ask you that question about where their tax refund is, and we want to make sure you have some background information and then some resources for them. So there are two ways to file a tax return, of course, electronically and paper. If it comes in electronically, that return is sent directly into our tax system. If it's filed on paper, we have to open it and we scan it, and then it's transmitted into our electronic filing system. It also has to get that data that has to be translated from people's handwriting into the tax system. So there's a data capture process where we might have to spot check that and make sure that the information is correct. So I'm sure that everyone thinks they have excellent handwriting. I have seen some of these tax returns. I will tell you, electronic filing is actually a much better process for everyone. And if you need a paper form, we will still continue to provide that. Every return is different, and we review every return, either electronically or with trained staff, to make sure that the right refund goes to the right person. If we have questions or is there something that's missing from a return, we will send a letter to a taxpayer and ask them to give us a call or send that information back in so that we can make sure that the right amount really is getting to that person. And then once approved, individuals either receive their refund by mail or directly into their bank account. And it's a similar process for property tax refunds that are sent out in later in the summer, and those 800,000 returns go through the same process, whether electronically or on paper. One of the things that we have been talking with this committee about is the increased incidence of identity theft. Many of us either have been or know someone who's been a victim of identity theft. And identity thieves are no longer only using that information to open a credit card or take out a line of credit, but they are filing fraudulent refund claims as well. And so over the past few years, we have been working very hard at the department to prevent this information from getting in the hands of criminals and then make sure that we're not sending state general fund dollars in the name of a Minnesota taxpayer to a criminal. So we want to make sure the right refund, not only the right amount, but gets to the right person. And so that is sometimes when we have individuals in Minnesota who have, like I said, been victims of identity theft, as many of us have been, we want to make sure that we are making sure it's the right person. And so the length of time that it takes to process a refund can vary from year to year. And as I mentioned earlier, we need, because of this increase in identity theft, we want to make sure that we're not sending general fund dollars to criminals. We will always make sure that the individual Minnesotan gets their refund, but again, we want to make sure we're preventing any of those refunds from going to the wrong people. So I want to also note for you in your packets, there is a sort of what we consider a little poster about. It's called Stop, Connect, Confirm. Tax scams are unfortunately also very prevalent. You see on the news reports that there are people calling up people asking for particular information. One of the scams that we have been seeing over the past 2 years is asking people for W-2 files. So this actually has happened to a number of businesses in Minnesota. It's where someone gets an email. It looks like it's from somebody who should be asking for this file. Somebody goes to somebody in human resources or goes to somebody in payroll and asks for the W-2 file. And unfortunately, they have handed those over. And those are spoofing emails, and they are now handed over a W-2 file for all of their employees to a criminal. And so we have been working hard with HR departments, with financial services organizations, and with CPAs, because, of course, CPAs and tax professionals have valuable information in their systems to really make sure that if you get a request for this kind of information, that you check in with that person directly in person or by phone and make sure that that is a valid request. Because once that information has gone out, a W-2 file, of course, is a very good set of information from which to file a fraudulent tax refund claim. So we want to make sure that we're also helping prevent that. And finally, I want to take a moment, Mr. Chair and members, to talk about the department's efforts to secure taxpayer data. We take very seriously the responsibility that we have when we gather people's tax information. Obviously, has very sensitive information in it. And we use technology helps us protect that, of course. Technology also helps us make sure things are convenient for our customers. We use security protocols for our e-services business accounts, much like you would find when you were to log into your bank account. So there's two-factor authentication, just like you would if you were trying to log in and make a transaction with your bank. The department also, as a part of our processes, also receives from the IRS federal taxpayer information. FTI is classified through a federal regulation, and so we have some security processes in place also that are required by the federal government through publication 1075, which is a regulation that governs how we manage that information electronically and in hard copy. We follow NIST standards, the Center for Internet Security Standards, and we make sure that our technology systems are constantly updated to protect against any potential threat. We also make sure that everyone at the, who works at the Department of Revenue understands that protecting taxpayer information is everyone's job. Obviously, our technology is very important, but as we just discussed, an individual opening an email can also put at risk an entire system, an entire email system. And so we train our staff annually and regularly through ongoing campaigns to make sure that people know about our technology and that they are taking steps to make sure that they're not that they are preventing any suspicious activity, reporting any suspicious emails that we get, and we also, of course, maintain inventories of our physical devices and systems, and then we also work very hard on web filtering, our antivirus and anti-malware protection, making sure that layer of protection is always there. So that is, those are some of the things that we do to help make sure we're protecting the taxpayer data. We take that responsibility very seriously. So on behalf of my colleagues, Assistant Commissioner Starr and Rowley, want to thank you for this time and the opportunity to share with you some of what's going on at the department. We look forward to working with this committee throughout session to answer any questions that you have about the tax administration that we engage in at the Department of Revenue. If you have constituents who have questions or concerns, we encourage you to pass those along to us, and we'd be happy to discuss any particular issues with you. We also know that one of our some of our work this session will be considering whether and how to conform to the federal law changes as we move forward in session, and so we look forward to working with you on that as well. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee.
Commissioner Bowerly, thank you for that very good and interesting information. Thank you so much. We do have member questions. Representative Becker Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so kind of back to the audit discussion, I just appreciate that, you know, we're trying to make the website easier. We're trying to make it easier for people to get the information because I think, you know, if there are errors in your reporting, I don't think that a lot of folks necessarily are, you know, out to do bad things so much as confusion about the right way to report things. And so I just want to make the connection between the ease of accessing the information and hopefully getting things correct, because if I'm paying what I'm supposed to be paying, it's only fair that businesses are paying what they're supposed to be paying as well. So just wanted to kind of make the connection between the work you're doing to make that the information easier to access. And just kind of thank you for putting the time and the effort into doing the outreach and the education, because I think that's a really important piece of making sure that when folks are audited, it isn't like the boogeyman. It's more of assisting them in making sure they're doing things correctly. So thank you.
Thank you. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This question is for Commissioner Starr. Now that I'm looking at the sales tax rate map, and thank you for providing the map. I'll look it up on your website so I can see exactly. But how do you address a business that is doing business in all of these different counties that have different rates? I mean, is that, you know, what is being done to help that business? Because I have one that's being audited now based on that very issue, that there are different tax rates in surrounding counties. So how does the department address that?
Commissioner Starr or Commissioner Bowerly?
Thank you.
Commissioner Bowerly, thank you.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Erickson, that is exactly one of the reasons that we wanted to put this map out, and one of the reasons we have spent a lot of time trying to help businesses understand what their obligations are under Minnesota law. As this committee well knows, those local option sales taxes get layered on top of other rates, the state general rate, perhaps a county rate, a local sales, a city's, right? And so we want to make sure that customers know what those are, and this map will help them do that. And prior to this map, we did have this calculator that we mentioned, and so that was has been available for several years. We won't talk about individual taxpayers, but if a taxpayer, if a retail business is making sales into to another location, then of course that is, the sales tax is due at that at the destination of that sale. I will tell you, when I was in St. Cloud last summer and talking with some of our sales tax auditors, and they were sharing with me that they have customers that they are doing audits with, and the layers of local taxes are very challenging our retailers. And so I think that's one of the reasons we are constantly looking to improve the technology and improve the ways that we can help them understand what their obligations are in this layered system of these local option sales taxes. So thank you, Representative Erickson. We agree it's a challenge for them, and we're doing everything we can to help them get the information that they need to meet those obligations.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Chair Marquardt. A question for Ms. Bowerly. Commissioner, welcome. Good to see you again. Regarding the free income tax filing, I know the state has a program that helps those who qualify to fill out their income tax, and the state, I don't have the number offhand, maybe staff does, but we appropriate a sizable amount of money to do that, to help folks to file their taxes. Is this program in tangent with that? And if so, maybe perhaps you have a number that this cost, in addition to the other program that we offer throughout the Twin Cities and throughout the state.
Commissioner Bowerly.
Chair Marquardt and Representative, yes, you appropriate to the Department of Revenue about $400,000 a year to provide grants to VITA sites across the state of Minnesota. So VITA sites are those volunteer income tax sites. They could be run by a local nonprofit. It could be in conjunction with an AARP site. That amount of money, what we know from our from those grantees is it's a portion of the money that they receive to help provide those services across the state of Minnesota. And so that is that in-person help, that free tax preparation assistance. There are almost 200 sites across the state of Minnesota. The grants that the state of Minnesota provides a very small portion of the funding that those sites receive. So I think as we talk through session, we will be hearing from some of those organizations about the need for additional funding for that free tax help, which goes, again, to people who might be veterans, people over a certain age, people who have incomes under about $55,000 to get that free in-person help. The other program I was talking about is electronic access to free electronic filing. That is provided through the software vendors themselves. So the software vendors who do business here in the state of Minnesota and also with the IRS provide access to their software, the same software that you would be able to access if you downloaded it on their website. They provide free access to those individuals, and that is provided by that software vendor community.
Okay. Representative Joaquim.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Commissioners and Assistant Commissioners, for being here. And I know in the past I've heard, too, that you're able, especially with the fraud issue, is it easier for you to screen for that fraud if people are filing online?
Commissioner?
Chair Marquardt and Representative Joaquim, we encourage people to file electronically. It is certainly the easiest way for customers because it walks them through step-by-step what they need to do to get to the right amount of tax or refund. Electronic filing has lots of benefits for us. It does allow us to our systems to operate more efficiently, and through that process, we can use all of our tools to make sure that we are addressing the fraud.
Oh. All right, Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question about some of the conformity issues. First of all, I personally think it would be helpful if we could take a look at some of the changes in conformity and what we would have to do, and specifically some of those base broadeners. If we could get some kind of outline as to which of those base broadeners are one-time money, which would be ongoing money, just to kind of have a good sense of, you know, the amounts of money that this committee has to work with as we take a look at conformity. But also I want to talk about slide number 7, specifically talking about 2018 Form M1, the starting point. Mm-hmm. Now, here it says that it's going to be the federal adjusted gross income, and that is a change from what I understand from previous tax years where we've used the federal taxable income. Is that something, well, obviously that's something that revenue can do without direction from the legislature? Is that a rule change revenue can make?
Commissioner Bowerly.
Chair Marquardt and Representative Lean, first to your question about one-time money and ongoing money, we'd be happy to follow up with you, and I think your House staff as well probably has ready access to that information, but we're happy to get you that information. With respect to the starting point of the form, so Minnesota law starts with conformity at FTI. That has not changed. That is a change that would require an act of the legislature and an enacted law. What we have done for the simplicity of taxpayers is to start the form at AGI, because as Assistant Commissioner Rowley mentioned, it is the simplest way for Minnesotans to be able to calculate the right amount of tax. So the form still gets you to exactly the right amount under Minnesota law, starting with FTI, where we are conformed. But the form starts with a different place to make the calculations easier. So we've simply changed the starting point of the form, but the law, of course, starts with FTI.
Representative Lee?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to follow up then, I don't exactly quite know how to ask this, but what I'm trying to get at is, would the form then take into account the change, would the state form then take into account the changes on the federal form between AGI and federal taxable income? Would that be all then on the state form, some of those numbers?
Commissioner Bowerly?
Rowley? Mr. Chair, Representatives, thank you. Between the NC and some of those additional schedules that we talked about earlier, we account for all of the differences between FAGI and help taxpayers get to the right amount of tax as the bottom line.
Okay, thank you.
So things like standard deductions and exemptions
sure.
and so on are good examples of that.
Thank you.
Representative Lestigard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and congratulations on being appointed Commissioner, Mrs. Bowley. My question is getting back to the sale suppression of software zappers, is this a growing problem and a trend you see moving forward? And if so, do we have the resources to be tracking this?
Who wants to answer that? Commissioner Bowerly.
Thank you, Representative Marquardt and Representative So we, along with, you know, other revenue agencies, other countries, have been seeing this growing trend over the last few years. We know that our colleagues in Canada have taken sort of bigger steps as a country and as in provinces. We think that our new law, which makes the possession of this a felony, and then, of course, the tax consequences, we think that we probably have the right law, but I will tell you as we work through these cases, we may come back to you and tell you that we think additional law changes might be helpful in making sure we can get at all of this. This is, I think it's not typically very Minnesotan to brag, but I think our team is really in the space of leading the country and doing this investigation and getting to these convictions. We appreciate so much the support of our local prosecutors who work these cases with us and bring the charges. And I think that what we used to see sort of, you know, you can imagine from movies, right? You find the second set of books under the counter. Well, now the second set of books can just be kept on your point of sale system with the help of this kind of software. And so I think that it's probably a true thing that criminals are very creative and people who are trying to avoid laws can be very creative, and we will do our very best to keep up with them. Anything you want to add?
Thank you. Representative Lestigard.
I was just going to say thank you, and then also if you the resources becomes an issue, I would encourage you to come back and seek them, because if this is a growing trend, that a problem is going to affect all Minnesotans, that we need to address it. So thank you.
Very good. See no further questions. Commissioner Bowerly and Commissioner Rowley and Commissioner Starr, thank you so much for your testimony today and information. The committee looks forward to working with you and appreciate all your work in the past and looking forward to a good session. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Members, on Tuesday we start hearing our first bills, and Chair Davids, you're in the leadoff on Tuesday. So I think that bill is being introduced today, I believe. So I think we have four bills up on Tuesday. So members, thank you for your good work. Have a great weekend. We are